Oh, wait, no, are we still Book Dragons? Or are we having a new name?
I think we could still be Book Dragons.
Is that still cool?
Yeah.
Okay, I just thought I'd best check that, because I was like, wait, are we? Are we not?
Okay, I'm going to jump a question on you that you might not like or appreciate, but can you remember the tune that we put at the start of the podcast?
Vaguely.
Can you sing it?
No, because it had like 3 parts. I probably got it on my phone. Why can you? Do you know it?
I do, but it's slightly cheating because I was re-listening to some of them.
I'm trying to, like, I remember the little, like, drums underneath and...
The little bongos.
Yeah. There.
We might not even have them anymore because they're potentially lost into the ether because this is a new Mac.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, because your old one...
I will find them. It will exist somewhere. Yeah. Even if I have to sniff it from an old podcast.
We'll find it.
But it was sort of like...
Yeah.
Like that.
Something like that. That's close enough.
Yeah. Hi! Yep, gonna start a...
Yeah, that's a good place to start. It's better than starting in the middle. We'll start here. Yeah, hi.
The start is a good place to start. Isn't that
I think it, like a nun said that.
Ah, oh, so many nuns, so much music.
They're just so quotable. So well. That's the thing. So yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, just like a year and a bit.
It's a short break in internet time. It's fine.
It's okay. We came back to it, which I feel is commendable.
That's true. There's a lot of things that they just stay in limbo forever, and you're like, really?
And you know what it means? Is that we actually will have books to talk about.
That is true. I've rather been
than having,
reading.
Rather than having 2 weeks of going, I've actually not had time to read, whatever.
I mean, I am guessing that will come in like 2 or 3 podcast time, but for now, I've read stuff. And we've got Marvel stuff as well to talk about, which is a lot more like us, to be fair.
I did rewatch Age of Ultron last night with a cheeky copy
that was like lent to you somehow, non-illegally.
People are so hard on that movie, and I love that when I was thinking about doing this podcast before, I went, I think we could do an episode without Marvel. Enough has happened and it's come around that quickly.
We just had a whole conversation about what we were going to talk about.
People are way too hard on that movie.
Why?
I think people want to make Marvel's gone so long now that people want to bit of a punching bag, or they want to be the no, Marvel is ruining movies now. No, fuck off.
I think there's been a lot of they've said all the good things now. Yeah. Like I think people were prepared with Ant-Man to just like rip it apart, and then they were like, damn.
Yeah, they were pleasantly surprised.
Damn, it's good. We can't use any of our critique.
Whereas it was the opposite with Ultron. It was expectations were high. People were hoping for different things, and yeah, it has flaws, but.
What
like, rewatching it, I was like, I still really enjoy this. So many funny moments and bits. And I'm happy to watch these guys together doing anything.
Well, like, I mean, outside of the Bond franchise, I can't really think of another franchise that had this many films in it. Mm. Like, I don't know how many they're up to, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's more than The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings combined. So, you know, there's many films.
Yeah.
So... I don't know, it's probably going to get to a point where they have to start going, yeah, that's a plot hole, but we haven't got time in like 2 hours of movie to address it, so we're just going to have to let that be, which is a shame. But I have a lot of faith in Joss, and if he says that it's fine, then it's fine.
And that's the other thing that really bugs me about people's reactions, is that they suddenly started to hate on Joss Whedon, and I was like, this is unfamiliar to me. Joss Whedon is sacred. What are you doing?
If you upset him, think of what he will do to your characters. Look at what he does to your characters when you love him. Okay, do you really want to upset Joss Whedon? He'll kill everybody.
I just don't get it. It's so, like, especially Tumblr, which is just, it can be the worst sometimes. Like, so much salt over that film. Like, stop it. And now, because of Civil War, and everyone really liked Winter Soldier, which is fair enough. I think Winter Soldier's up there. I think... From a technical point of view, it might actually be the best of the bunch. It's up there for me, but it's not my favourite. Avengers will always be, but Winter Soldier is just, like, a technically amazing film.
It set up so much. Like, it was a real game changer of a film, which you wouldn't have expected it to be, because you would have thought, okay, Avengers, that's going to be the game changer. And then it's going to be, well, at that time, Avengers 2. You know, and things aren't really going to change much in between. We'll just, we'll coast, and then we'll team up again, and we'll... And no, they were like, no, no, none of that. Yeah. there's a thing called Hydra, and we're going to blow up a lot of buildings. It's going to be very big, and you're just going to have to deal with that. And it was pretty amazing.
So people are treating the Russo brothers who directed it and are doing Civil War, and they're kind of treating him like he is almost a hero. Like, I say he is them.
That's okay. I'm not going to judge you for it.
They are one person. But they're treating them like the heroes themselves, as if they're going to save Marvel. And it's like, but there's nothing to save.
Saving.
Like,
yeah.
I don't understand this reaction. Just might have... You might have, like, had issue with certain things in Ultron, but it's so good! Leave Joss alone!
Oh no. Oh no, we're in that sort of range of things.
Leave her alone! Oh my god.
He's been through so much.
I keep wanting to go into the Catwoman. I feel like those two are different, very similar people. Is
the one who wants to hug all the cats.
I just want to hug all of the cats, yeah. Which is me right now, by the way.
Wanting to hug all of the cats.
Yeah. So we're in a new location.
We are.
I've moved house, so limited interruptions.
Which is impressive because I still live with my mum because I can't afford to move out.
That's fine.
But you're a homeowner now.
I'm a homeowner, but I am the type of idiot who keeps going outside to hang out with random cats. I don't have a cat yet myself, but there are cats.
What you have, though, is a cat flap, which makes this all fun.
And, Jack will come home one evening and I will be surrounded by cats. And it's like, sorry, Jack, I caved. I let them all in. They are.
All you need to do, you wouldn't even need to do anything other than just open that door. Just let it happen naturally. They'll find you.
They'll find me. Yeah, they keep, because it's summer. It's warm, we have the door open, and then they keep sneaking in. And I just gently stand up and go, come on now. You have to leave.
I just have to point out, though, that warm is not what this weather is right now. We are having some crazy... Like, this is not even English weather. I don't know what we are in right now, but it's like some kind of heat wave, but with no sun. It's all humidity.
Storm wave, which is totally a superhero name.
That sounds way cooler than it is as well. Yeah. Congrats. That's awesome. That's what it's called now.
So, what is the last book you read? Yes, let's get some books.
Yeah, just jump right in there. The last book I read is right next to me because through an amazing coincidence, it was on your bookshelf. So I have been reading Poison Study, which is by Maria V. Snyder. She read off the front of the book. And it's awesome. It's one that I got very cheaply from The Works, which I think is probably where you got yours.
I was like, I'm pretty sure I got it from The Works, which is the reason why I have the entire set, because it's what The Works does. It's like, have an entire series for £3.
And you're like, why, yes. Yeah. Yes, I will.
I will do that, yes.
But I have to say, I was really pleasantly surprised by it. So it starts off with a girl who is due to be executed because she has killed someone. And there is a code of behaviour that governs the way this country, I guess, works, which says that when the poison taster for one of the commanders dies, as you know, it's an occupational hazard, it happens if you're a poison taster, the next prisoner who's due to be executed is offered the job, and so this kicks off the plot of the book. And it's just, it's really different from anything I'd kind of read before, and I was just really surprised by how much I liked it, because I thought it was going to be a bit boring, but I didn't want something I'd have to concentrate on very much. And I got about 50 pages in and I went, I am genuinely enjoying this book. So luckily the next four are already on my bookshelf, because that's how The Works works.
So. Is it a magical series? Because the Poison one, because I read the first chunk of this, basically since getting my bookcase and finally having all of my books out, I realized that one of my problems was that I would start reading a book, pause, and then it would end up in a pile never to be read again. So it's been a revelation of taking books out going, oh yeah,
this one.
I still want to read this. So it isn't kind of nice in a way, because it does feel like I've got a mini library of books that I can keep going back to and reading. And so anyway, I had started reading this a couple years back, I got to the first part where she's only just started the studies. But it came across as something that didn't have magic in, but it could potentially.
It does. So magic is illegal at the moment in this. I think the country's called Ixia, but I might be wrong, because you know I'm only one book in. You know, talk to me again after I've read them all. And the main character basically has, like, involuntary magic, basically. If you threaten her life, she will save herself with magic, more or less. I'm sure there's a lot more to it once we get to the proper explanation of magic. But as the second one is called Magic Study, I'm pretty sure that I'm headed that way. magic is very much, it's known to them, but it's not really permitted. So whatever magic she has got in the first book, she is trying to hide and basically rejecting, and then sort of does start to use it towards the end, so it's creeping in there. It's pretty cool, but it's obviously gonna play a bigger role going forward. So it's really, like I say, I was just really pleasantly surprised by these books. They were awesome.
So is the bulk of it her still in that role, or does the things change quite quickly?
Yeah. So the guy who does her training, Valak, is like the spy master, it seems like, for the kingdom, and she is supposed to just be trained up to basically be the poison tester, and then that should have been the end of their relationship. But they, because people are trying to kill her, he ends up kind of taking her under his wing a bit, and she starts to she trains with some soldiers and learns a bit of self-defense and basically just generally mans up. And it's really quite impressive because it doesn't feel sort of forced at all. It's quite natural the way it all comes about. And you find out things like, before she was in the cell, you do find her tragic backstory, but as well as that, she tells you that she used to be an acrobat, and sort of all that comes into play. So there's a brilliant bit where, quite early on in the book, where she strikes a deal whereby they're doing a training exercise with sort of however many soldiers, and they were going to set free a prisoner and basically capture them as quickly as possible. And they sort of said that rather than using just any prisoner, they would use her, because as the poison tester, she has been poisoned. So every day she has to see Valak to get her antidote. That's how they know she'll hang around the castle and not escape.
Yeah, I remember that bit. Yeah.
And so she volunteers to do this. And the way she kind of avoids them and kind of... I'm pretty sure she makes it out of the castle and basically turns herself in pretty much at the end of a day, and she's like, yeah, hi. Which is just really cool, really great introduction to the character, and it just was really good. I find it really hard to kind of find any negatives with it so far, because it's a really good setup and like a really fun world.
Nice when you find a book like that out of the works.
Yeah, because normally you're like, oh, it came from the works, we'll see. It'll pass the train journey.
If you're not English, by the way, the works is like discount shop with the most random stuff.
Yeah.
So they'll have like a tiny shelf of books that are in sets usually. And
then they'll have the tables full of DVDs. Like random, like book three of that series, book four of that one, but none of the others. And then craft supplies and
stationery. So very random.
Wool. There's a lot of wool in there. I'm always like, okay.
But I like a good search through the works. Like, I remember getting anime box sets when I was a kid.
They did anime box sets?
Yeah, were the most random. Again, it was like the first few episodes of six different series, and they're all wildly different from one another. So I don't think I've found any decent anime that way, which is a shame, but it was obviously a thing, because in like the secondhand DVD places you see them all, because they had this sort of weird blue banner around the box art.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the proper DVDs, it was like the weird knockoff box set version. It's very weird.
Well, I always got the feeling that the works kind of bulk buy whatever's not sold, or whatever's perhaps been like overordered. But yeah, then every now and again, if something's proving to be really popular, so, you know, a couple of years ago, you couldn't move in there without falling over a box set of The Hunger Games because they were just selling, yeah. You know. So it's a really weird mix of stuff that seems to be there just because it's odds and ends, and stuff that's really popular that they're just selling in a box set. So it's a good one to try. They really should be paying us for the advertising right about now.
By just the saying. Way, this podcast is sponsored by The Works. Go there for your classifieds, all duties. So the last book that I read was unusual in the sense that it was done in a book swap. Because I have a book out, by the way. And
Have we told the world about your book?
But I have a book out that came out since our last podcast, which is all very exciting. I will probably do a link or something in the podcast, so you may discover
it. We should do a podcast.
Or I will do a sponsor message at the end for my own book or something.
I think we should do a podcast at some point and just talk about your book. Okay. And be, like, just like a little one.
Interview or pretend that...
We could stay on topic. We could do a whole podcast where we talk about one thing. That'd be amazing.
We could probably make it a feature, maybe like a chapter at a time.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know.
You could do a dramatic reading for us. Like, chapter one.
Funnily enough, that's kind of what I was doing while I was testing the audio for this. So I was like, right, I'll read a bit out loud. And it jumped to the end, and I spotted something. I was like, I don't think that was still supposed to be in the book, but I get away with it. So it's indie publishing. I've done a lot of the work myself, but I did pay for a proofreader, which is why it's readable.
They say that's the one expense if you're gonna self-publish. The general consensus is go and pay for a proofreader. The rest you can sort out.
So things that were inconsistent, they'd spotted, but this one, it kind of reads as an event that or something Freya might have done in the past, and you kind of think, well, a new reader would just accept that's something she did ages ago, whereas really, in the first draft, that's something she'd just done, but is now out of the book.
Freya being your main character, of course.
So that's a nice introduction to my book, me finding terrible mistakes.
Well, it's good, now we can see your improvement.
So anyway, when I was doing like a giveaway, so I was giving it away for free on Kindle, and someone had found it through Tumblr, who was also an author, and he approached me randomly and said, you know, are you interested in doing a book review swap?
Which is quite exciting because this is a real actual person just using the internet, not a friend of a friend of a friend, which is usually how self-publishing goes.
And this is kind of it shows that randomly approaching people can work. I mean, I know people are scared of it, but sometimes it is worth it. Like, it was worth it for him because I could easily have gone, nah, I don't really do that, but thanks, because he did say he was going to review mine anyway, whatever he did. And I said, yeah, that's fine, I'll set some rules down. I said, if I don't like it, I'll try and be honest and say why and be constructive rather than just going, meh, don't like it. And also, if it was low rating, I said, I'll leave it up to you if you want it to go up. Basically, I was just preparing for myself because the last time I did this, it was a really awful book.
But it wasn't just the case of, like, it wasn't the sort of book you would normally read. It was just not a good book.
Yeah, it's just a terrible book. Not for this one, it was such a nice surprise. I went in completely blind. I think I guessed that it was fantasy-esque. Went in not knowing anything.
Because I remember you saying when you set it up before you started reading it, and you were like, oh, I'm not really sure what I've signed up for here. Like, we'll see.
But it was really good. So the premise is that there are alternate universes, like alternate worlds, but they all kind of sit in rings. So the central world, I assume, is ours. And then there's sort of what are called wakes, which are the different rings around that world. And the further out you go, the less like this Earth it is. So if you're on the first wake, it's kind of like this world, but maybe a little bit different. Maybe there's a different prime minister or president or whatever. But if you go out to the fifth wake, then things become wildly different, and that's where you get the sci-fi-esque worlds, or the steampunky worlds, or fantasy worlds.
So, like, full-on, like, cat people, or, like, people with wings, whatever.
Actually, I think everyone was still human.
Oh, okay.
Sort of.
But maybe, like, totally different power sourcing, which gets you to more steampunk side of things.
Yeah, or... so the way that this kind of got introduced is that one of the main characters explains it to the other, and because he spots that there's like a massive robot head that's just sort of lying in the dirt, and he's like, oh, this must be the fifth wake, because you have like a giant, you at this one point there was a giant walking robot, and the guy who lives on this world is like, well, what's wrong with that? He went, it's ridiculous. Like, no other world would do this because it involves too much power to even hold itself up. It makes no sense. Only a fifth wake world would do this. It's ridiculous. So yeah, a lot of it is an adventure of them hopping through different worlds. I don't know if the writer comes from Portland, but they seem to keep hopping to different versions of Portland, and it's always raining, which is like a really nice touch.
Oh, so you've got that in common, because Manchester.
Yeah.
It's always raining here too. Do you remember the name of it, the book?
Yeah, it's called The Fifth Wake by Brian Curry.
That's cool. That's quite catchy as well. I like that.
Yeah. My only criticisms are things like... I wasn't a fan of the cover. Purely from a selling point of view, I feel like a different cover might attract more readers.
Yeah, but you know
readers.
What they say about books and covers.
Yeah, and...
but how else do you judge?
Yeah, that's it. Maybe there was the odd, like, grammatical error. But, you know, indie books, he's in the same boat I am, and he spotted some in mine. So, whatever. But yeah, and I was just...
You still get actual, like, published books, yeah. Which have errors in.
Yeah, I remember telling this to someone going, yeah, I spotted errors in Harry Potter. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they happen.
Because people are people, and sometimes we make mistakes, and there's only so many times you can read a page and actually spot the mistakes on them.
Yeah. So I was completely won over by this book, I think, after a few pages, because it starts with one of the characters falling out of a portal hole thing, and it was just the way he kind of described what you could view behind him, and it was just this idea of like endless stars that went on forever, and I just love the idea of you know, an endless universe and multiple possibilities, but at the same time it never went out of hand, so you got to explore a bit, and it was a nice balance of exploring but not going too crazy so you weren't completely lost. Everything, you know, you knew what was happening the whole time. It's really solid.
It's funny because to me, like, sorry, the reason I'm a bit like staying out of this one is I am involved in, well, we all kind of are really. Back when we were in school, we wrote a similar premise idea, which was like TSH.
Yeah.
We had, it was called, which stood for That Shouldn't Happen, which tells you a lot about our mindset, I'm sure. But it was a similar idea. It was, you know, jumping through different worlds, traveling to them. I guess it's all a bit sort of Doctor Who, really. And it's always good to hear how somebody's made that work and how it's interesting, because it's not as much... The actual setup is not that original in and of itself, but the execution's what makes it special.
Yeah, see, the main character of Ridris, you kind of... He filled the role of the Doctor, almost, but you could see archetypes and things that you'd seen before, but it was just done really well that you didn't mind if anything felt familiar. But the other thing about the idea of wakes, it was something that I'd not heard before, so just that kind of added this extra element on top of the world hopping.
Yeah.
Because it would have been easy to say, right, there's just a million worlds, we'll jump between them, whatever. But it was... I just love the idea of always hopping between... Arriving in a world and someone went, everything's kind of normal, we're probably in the second ring here. And there's things like time is slightly different depending on what wake you're from. So because
that's
the
cool.
Main character's from the fifth wake, and then he ends up in the second wake for a while. And then there's a whole bit in the book where they say, oh, you've been aging really quickly because your time is running differently to everyone here. He's like, what? It's like, yeah, you've been running around with me for a few days, but really you're about 10 years older.
Oh, what? That's harsh. Like, I'll just take 10 years of your life there.
And that, but, I mean, they fix it with magic.
Okay, because that, good. Because that's quite a downside to...
So that's like another element. So someone joins their little party who has magic. But depending on what wake she's in, changes how much she can use. So the closer to the middle she is,
she can't do
it. The harder it is. Yeah,
that's cool. I like that.
So yeah, so it's one of those where all these rules set in place really added to it, and actually you realise it is part of the main plot. So the sort of antagonists all come from this fifth wake world, which is sort of buying itself time. So the other idea is that if you're on the fifth wake and you go a little bit too crazy, the world could actually just fall off into nothing and be destroyed.
Wow.
So this is a world that's on the edge and has been on the edge for thousands of years.
And do they know?
And they're buying time by destroying other worlds.
Like, if you're in the... So, I'm guessing our world, it's not common knowledge that, obviously, that the other worlds are out there, that there are, like, the wake setup. But yeah. Does that become common knowledge as you go further out? Like, do the people in the fifth wake know?
No. But I think it's... You kind of guess that there are other people out there who know. So the way that Ridris is just hops between worlds and has them for a while. And it's kind of explained that there are a few other people who do that.
Yeah.
And have discovered this. But I think it's understood that like 90% of people, most people don't know about it. They just know that their world is the world.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, I really enjoyed it. If you can't tell, highly recommend it. It's an indie book, so if you read it, you're helping an indie author. Go check it out. I read it very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think it was literally like, because I tend to see you on Fridays, which makes this weird because it's not a Friday.
Yeah, we're not recording going so tired.
I know.
Falling asleep.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah, that's going to be really surreal for a while. But yeah, I'm pretty sure it was like the next week when I saw you again, you were like, no, it was brilliant. Totally, totally wrong to be worried before I started it.
Yeah. And I've moved on to two books at the same time, like I do, because I had one going. So there's one beside my bed, and then there's one here beside me. So again, the problem of setting up a bookcase and having books was the thing of, ooh, yeah, this one. I was totally gonna read this one next.
I've been rationing mine lately because I've had some. So I've known, well, obviously I've known for a while because one of the authors I grew up with was Tamora Pierce, and I love her books so much. And I knew quietly in the background that she'd done another trilogy, and it's been sat on my bookshelf for quite a while, and like I'm just feeling like maybe it's time, but then once I read them, that's it, I'm up to date again.
So it wasn't a case of forgetting about it or not giving it, it's just like I don't want it to be over.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Want there to always be the
she writes book. Her books are set across two worlds, and the one that is my favorite is the, I think it's Emmeline is the name of the world, and that's more magic-y. And the other world, Tortal, is sort of, there's still a lot of magic in there, but it's kind of based around a city, and it's about knights, pretty much, and people training to be knights. And it's a series set in that world, which, as I say, is like my slightly less favourite of the two. And basically, a lot of her websites and articles and things were saying there was going to be a new book released by now, which was set in my favourite world, and it isn't. And it's not here, and I don't think it's coming, and I just got really depressed about it. So I was like, okay, so maybe I'll go for the Becca Cooper series now. Maybe I'll actually get around to reading that. But I'm still trying to put it off, so I keep thinking, I'll read that. I'll read Becca Cooper. But I'll just finish this first.
Yeah.
So I'll just do this magic study book first, and then probably the other ones after it.
So funnily enough, in one of the, I think, one of the last podcasts we did, I mentioned the fact that one of my favourite authors was bringing another book out, And hey, look, like over a year later, it's been out. It was amazing.
Nice.
So this is Jonathan L. Howard's Johann Cabal series. I've mentioned it so many times. But The Brothers Cabal, I got it for Christmas. And I think I read it in 2 days, 2 or 3 days, which I've not done in so, so long. It was amazing.
The last book I read like that was like Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. It was like, I sat down in a room, a silent room, no TV, no distractions, just sat and read it on my own for hours and hours and hours. It was so good.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't told from Johann's point of view. Like, most of the book is about his brother, but his brother is more, like, dashing and charming than he is. And oh, it's just hilarious. So, like, really this guy was dead. He died at the end of the first book. I won't say how, but it happened. Sorry, spoilers, but it needs to be said for this. And he was a vampire, so he died by being into light.
I like that. That's the after.
By the way,
yes,
vampire. So he gets resurrected by this group of people, and he comes out the ground, and he's all sort of gross and skinny, and they all sort of. They have a sacrifice for him to consume, and he's like, well, I don't really need to kill anybody. I do kind of need to drink some blood though, so maybe if I take a bit from everyone, is that okay? And they're thinking he's the supreme evil being, and they're like, we have a sacrifice though. He's like, no, it's fine, I'll take a bit from everyone.
Yeah, it's like, that's cool and all, but
okay, all right.
That awkward moment when you summon like your demon, yeah. And it won't kill your sacrifice. Oh no.
So yeah, he gets brought to like this evil organization of people, and stuff happens, and I just love it. If you like Lovecrafty style horrors happening and supernatural stuff, read it. It's so good. And that character is amazing. It's like, I want him to exist and to come around for tea.
He sounds just awesome.
But I think that's the good thing about having him in the past books, though, is that you always follow Johann Cabal, who's like a bit grim and very serious and is not a nice guy most of the time. Like, he will happily murder someone if it means his plans go better, like slightly better. And then you have this guy called Horst, his brother, who's just, like, really charming and nice and friendly to everyone and sweeps them off their feet. And then, obviously, his brother's quite jealous about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the best thing ever. It was just to have time to sit and read, because it doesn't happen a lot. Hopefully it will happen more now that I have a garden to sit and read. If it's not like this, because it's really horrible and rainy outside and terrible.
But still the humidity, just because it's raining out there, it's not going to get any better. I'm really not equipped to deal with this.
Yeah, especially seeing as we can't use a shower at the moment. Shower is out of action while Jack sorts out bathroom. So we're having baths, which just don't do when you really need to, yeah, whatever.
This whole weather situation is not conducive to an effective podcast, yeah. I would say.
So my plans for this podcast going forward, we still want to stick with books, but obviously we go on a lot of tangents. I want to keep talking about comics. I read comics quite a lot. So maybe we should do some book clubs with comics eventually or something like that.
Why not? Can't hurt.
Plus, they're quicker to read. So, like... so we might go off on tangents and talk about other things as well. We both game, we both TV, we both movie.
I think that's probably come across by now. So rather than just rejecting our tangents, we're going to embrace them and be like, this is just part of our podcast now.
We still do books because I feel like there's not enough book podcasts out there. And there's plenty of game ones, so we'll try to be light on the gaming, but yeah.
But I think as well a lot of book podcasts, it can be kind of whatever's new and popular. Mm. And you don't always need to be pointed in the direction of the things that are already popular.
Mm.
It's like, well, I've read that. Where am I going next?
Yeah. The one thing I might ease up on, though, is the book news. Because the problem with book news is that there's not a lot of it other than...
And you already know.
Such an author is bringing something out.
if they are one of your authors, you know. Yeah. You know whether they're bringing stuff out or not.
So the other thing I was going to talk about was games. Because lately I've been playing a lot of games that are story-based. I was showing these to Rachel when she came around. Journey came out on the PS4 recently. I'm a couple of years behind on this game because it came out while I was in Canada, I think. And then when we picked up the PS4, it was one of those...
Did they not have PlayStations in Canada or something?
Well, we didn't, so...
Didn't even have a kettle, like, sad times.
We rectified that very quickly. So in a week we bought two kettles because we got the...
the most British thing ever. Well, for a year everyone, you're like, oh my god, guys, there's no kettle.
They microwave the water. I don't understand. And then we went to IKEA and they didn't have the electric one, so we went with the manual old stick it on hob one for now thing. Anyway, where was I going? Games.
Sorry.
So, yeah, when we got the PS4, I thought, Journey will eventually come out on the PS4. It's gonna happen, I'll just be patient and wait. Which is what I did, and it happened, and I played it, and oh my god, it is the most perfect game ever. It's so simple, but it completely wins in its simplicity. It wins on every single level. So, like, the music is gorgeous, the look of it is amazing. And
it's not the sort of game, like I was saying before, it's not the sort of game where you're like, no, I have to play this to enjoy it. You don't. It's gorgeous. You can just sit and... It'd be one of those things where I could see sitting down to, like, play it, and then about 4 hours later, you're like, oh, I'm still here. I'm still here and I'm just watching now. that's happened.
And there's so many times where I just had a big grin on my face, and it's like, that does not happen very often, and it's so beautiful. I can say other than just go play it if you haven't already, but I think it's one of those, if you're a gamer, you've probably heard of it by now, so I'll leave it at that. But it was quite funny that I finished that and then very quickly moved on to the new game, which is Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which a lot of people talk about at the moment with good reason.
I'm also really glad that you pointed out to me that that was a game, because I kept seeing, like, Everybody's Gone to the Rapture and being like, what is this? I've obviously just totally missed it.
So you'd seen articles about it and stuff.
I've just seen it mentioned, like, mostly, like, the kind of the name drop, or, like, just people kind of ending a thread with it, and I'm like, okay, that's a bit abrupt, but webs. And then now it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, so... It's, you kind of wake up, I guess, or you start the game and you're in a English village in the 80s. So if you're English or have been to England, you've probably been to one of these villages. It's the, you know, quintessential, there's two pubs, big, nice old houses.
Gated bit where posh people live.
There's a church, and...
Does it have, like, a village green, like, midsummer style kind of thing?
Yeah, and a stream, and then, like, a random holiday camp to one side with an outdoor pool. And I was like, yeah, that's a really English thing to have an outdoor pool, despite the fact we have the worst weather ever. So you basically walk around, and there's, like, an orb of light that might appear. And you can then... do something with the controller and turn it, and it'll make things appear, and it's sort of motes of light that make out silhouettes of people, and then you end up watching these scenes of things that have happened previously. So you're trying to piece together a story, but you're exploring it at your own pace, or you're seeing things in a different order, so someone else will probably see things slightly differently, or they might catch things that you've missed. And it's just, you completely get pulled in and trying to figure out what's happened, but you're also just interested in the story of these people. And it's just this idea of people facing potentially the end of the world, or people are disappearing or getting really sick, and So, like, you might walk into a bathroom and then there's, like, bloody tissues in the sink, and then you see one of these lights reenact a scene of, you know, crying because they think their husband's upstairs dead, and it's just, gosh, like, yeah, it's really emotional and really melancholy, but you just, I could not get enough
of
that.
And also beautiful. That's the weird thing. Like, because you were saying that they kept a really slow pace of movement when you're actually controlling, I assume you're a person, when you're being the camera. It keeps a really slow pace when you're just walking around, so you've actually got time to appreciate the scenery, which is worth doing, strangely. It's not often you see a game. Because I thought when it first started, I thought you were still on, like, a cutscene, and then you just moved, and I was like, wait, what? That's the gameplay?
Yeah, it's so pretty. And, like, there's a... Early on in the game, I went to go explore a stream, and I was kind of looking down at the stream and then went to turn away, and I kind of went, wait a minute, there's, like, there's a bomb there on the ground. Okay. And I, like, I said this to someone else who played it, and he was really surprised, so he'd not spotted that at all. And because at one point in the game, they talk about planes, like, flying over and dropping something, dropping bombs of some description. So yeah, you keep jumping in and out of the story at different points. You might see it when it's really close to that happening, or early on in the week when a couple of old people have gone disappeared, but they just think they've wandered off. Yeah, it was just, again, it was like Journey. It was an experience so unlike anything I'd had before, and it was just really beautiful.
I like games that rely on you, though, to piece it together. Mm. You don't always want to be spoon-fed the plot.
Yeah,
it's nice.
And even when you're finished, you'll have questions and you'll want to talk about it with someone. So if you ever feel the mood to go play it, then maybe we should come back and
chat
about
probably.
It and go into detail. And just play
one Friday we'll have to play. Yeah. And then, we should do that. That's awesome. Because that game looked amazing.
Yeah. It might take a while, but it's... I felt like the need to say it because they are about stories, and even though Journey, no one speaks, no one says anything, it's still a story in itself, and yeah, it's really beautiful.
Because I'm just filling the gap at the moment before Persona 5 by replaying all the old Personas, which is just basically a drain on my life, but I'm really happy with that situation. I've definitely got time for new games. Because otherwise I'm going to have to finally... I've been at the very end of Persona 3 for about 3 weeks now, and I'm just not finishing the game because I just don't want it to be over.
But then you got back Persona 4 for us, so...
I know, but then I'll end it, and Persona 5 won't be out yet. Like, that's not acceptable to me, because it's not coming out till the end of the year. There's not, like, an official release date, but they're saying, like, quarter four. So, yeah. And that's in the US, like, we may not get it in England till next year.
Oh, no.
But, yeah, so really you should help me fill that void.
With more games. Yep. There's so many good games. Yeah, my gaming for the last few months, other than the small ones, has just been Dragon Age. Like, just lots and lots of Dragon Age. Which you should also give a try at some point, because...
I've seen the length of your games. Like, that's a dangerous one to start playing.
It really is, but it is so... Again, it's another one where it's worth it for the characters. Like, you could just spend a good 2 or 3 hours wandering around your main castle place just talking to everybody. It's like, no, I want a new conversation. I want something new to happen with you. Go! And then people describe you as their best friend, and you're like... Oh, thanks. Like, you really want to please all of these people.
This is a similar issue I have with Persona, because obviously part of the way the leveling up process works is that you make friends with people, and then your friendships get stronger, and then at the end you're like, you have forged a bond that can never be broken. Yeah. And like, if you speak to that person after that, it's kind of like you feel the warmth of the bond you've created, and it's like, it's a real... It's a big thing. It's like I really know them. Except I don't.
The funny thing with this one, though, is it's the same thing as, like, Mass Effect and lots of games where you make sort of moral choices. Or, like, with this one, you might make a choice and it will come up with a little subtitle going, so-and-so disapproves, so-and-so approves, they slightly approve, they really approve.
And you're like, oh, but no. But,
like, I had one character who I kept putting in my party because she was kind of amusing. But then everything I did pissed her off. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Why can I do nothing right for you? It's like, are you happy now? It's like getting really bitter. But then there's like Dorian is just like hilarious. And he's like your best friend all the time. It's like, yeah, we're buddies. We're BFFs.
You're fine. He just hates you. Like, he's your best mate, but he disagrees with everything you do.
Oh, no. He agreed with quite a lot of things. Oh, but, okay, so there was him, and then there was Sarah, the elf archer person. I think because...
Oh, you putting an elf archer in your party?
Well...
Never.
I needed an archer because I was like a rogue who stabbed people, so I needed someone who's far... Yeah.
A distance weapon. Yeah, I'm with you.
So I think because her morals were to do with she was there to protect the little guys, so she could not care less about the kings and queens. She's like, I want to look after the people working in the kitchens and the little guy. So I think if you do anything that's kind of for the establishment, then she'll really hate you. And it's like, no, go away. I'm fucking leader here. Leave me alone.
It's like, you're my group. I say we're doing this.
But it, this way, she was the only character out of everyone who, whenever I spoke to her in the main bit, there was an option to kick her out of the party. I was like, yeah, she must really disapprove of everything I do.
Yeah.
It's like, I've not pressed that button yet, so I might have to do a separate save file to see what happens. I'm sure it's just a disappointing, right, bye, and then you never see her again.
Oh, that's so sad. Like, banished from the game forever.
But I have so many saves because it's the type of game where you go, right, I want to do that again, but do this slightly differently. Yeah. So, I'm going to jump to comics now.
Okay, and tell me so about some
we're,
comics.
We're just going to share good things that we've done recently. This is just like a nice, good session of go play this, go read this. And so I picked up Nimona, which is, it started as a webcomic by, I can't remember her name. I remember her online name, which is Ginger Hayes. So if you recognize that name, she co-created Lumberjanes. If you're a comic reader, you might have heard of them.
Oh, do you know what I have? Because you told me about it.
But Nimona was like, kind of funky, and it's one of those things that became unexpectedly sad in places. So it's just a little bit of a funny, quirky fantasy story about a character who can shapeshift into anything, who wants to be the sidekick slash minion to a bad guy. Okay. So she's like, no, you need my help. Yeah. And so she helps him plot and do things. It's kind of hard to describe the story, but I suppose the last bit is just kind of finding out more about her, and you find out that she's got a little bit of a sad backstory. But yeah, it's funny, it's sad, it's amazing. Check it out. I realised that I was going to talk about this, but I don't know how else to describe it. There's not a lot to say other than go read it.
I like the fact that it started out as a webcomic as well. I always think that's a good sign. There's got to be a lot of love for the story.
And the thing that I liked about it is that it stretches the rules of fantasy. So people have like video calls and things where they'll talk to each other, so that it brings in random modern elements into it. And it's one of those times where you think, I didn't realize you could do this. Like, it's obviously, you know, when you write something you can do whatever you want, but you tend to find yourself following certain rules and sticking into certain, like,
yeah, it's like
circles.
One of my very favorite fan fictions is a Harry Potter one, and I'm sure it's called The Naked Quidditch Match, but the whole story is told in they're called emails, and it's like email basically. And it just like pops up in front of the person and they can like read. And I'm like, why did nobody ever do this before? Why was there never a messaging system? Like, why? Because obviously they don't have like computers at Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And it was the first, because it's quite an old fic now, but it was the first time I'd ever seen it. It was the same kind of moment when you're like, that's really obvious that they would have some kind of like equivalent technology, except it's magic.
Yeah, I had that sort of moment when while I was writing the book I'm editing now, because it started off as just like quite a traditional fantasy world, and I was like, no, I could make this steampunky, or like the soldiers don't have to run around swords, they can have pistols instead, and I might have a place where they have sort of versions of cars but not really cars. So it's like exploring different ways of doing things.
I think it's always cool to be the first person to do that, because like to be the first person that you come across who's gone, it's a fancy world, but I'm just gonna ring this guy. That's fine.
I think that's why steampunk has become so popular as well, because it's just like, well, you can just twist the rules and change it to however you want. And
I don't get it.
Really?
It's fine. I'm fine with it. But it's, I'm like, But it's like, I don't get the love for it. I think steampunk is cool, but it's not, people really like steampunk. Like, there are some people out there who are like, it is the way, you see like people having steampunk weddings and like, I don't get it.
No.
Not to that level, no. I'm just kind of like, it's not, I don't know, not that clear. I'm like, what?
That makes me kind of sad. Like, what if there's a book where Sherlock Holmes, like, legitimately goes to fight a vampire?
No, I'm fine with it. Like, I would read it and I would enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I just...
You don't get the obsession.
No, I don't see... Obviously, it just doesn't capture my imagination in the same way it does for some people, because I'm like, yeah, but anything that you put in that is, like... Any time you start, like, fusing in bits of, like, technology or machine or anything like that, I'm like, yeah, but your magic, effectively, could have done that. Like, I'm always like, is this a bit... You're just doing this to look cool. It's the hipster of the literary world to me. And that doesn't mean I don't like it. It's just, I don't get it as its own genre yet. But maybe I've just not found the right steampunk thing.
So, amazingly, I have... a book to talk about that is relevant to this topic.
Oh, really?
Calm down. Oh, don't get too overexcited.
So it's not a tangent. This is like an actual link that we're making, right? Oh my god.
So I read this sort of time last year, I think, I started reading it. It's a steampunk novel. First one, I can't actually... something like the story of Spring-Heeled Jack, or it's one of those adventures of... Such a body. Which there's probably a few of. I want to see Newbery and Hobbs, but no, that's the series that I've just started now, which is a completely different one.
We'll find it.
But the thing that I liked about it is that it sets up the steampunk world, but you actually find out that, written into the book, they've explained why the world is that way.
Oh, see, that works better for me then. Because it's not just like someone's gone, oh, that's cool, throw that in there.
So, in this world, there's animals that have been engineered to do certain things. So, there are parrot messengers that will go around and repeat messages back to people. But the problem is, every so often, they'll... like, there's usually a fault with it. So, with them, they'll usually, like, swear every so often. And then there's dogs that have a similar role, that go take messages around or deliver papers or whatever. I think there's even like a giant geese that fly around and sort of carry carts through the air.
Oh, cool.
So it's like a different form of transport. And then there's a lot of those typical steampunk stuff, so like a steam-powered carriage and that kind of thing. But the whole... you find out later on in the book, there's basically this character that has actually travelled in time. So they've travelled back in time and changed something. And because of that change, the whole world became crazy. So for a while, there's a character who just keeps appearing out of nowhere going, why are there talking monkeys? I don't understand. The world is not supposed to be this way. Are you insane?
Right, so he went
Yeah, so
back.
There's one character in the whole thing who knows how the world should be.
And it isn't this.
No, it's not this.
Oh, okay, that's quite cool.
And this is a little bit of a spoiler, but not too much. So the world ends up just staying as it is. So something happens to him towards the end, and the two main characters go, well, this is the only world we know. You know, I'm quite happy with it the way it is. And then that's it. So I assume for the whole series, things just stay the way they are.
That works for me a whole lot better than it just being like, and then this happened. And then she had, like, I don't know, magic goggles that could kind of zoom in on something miles away using technology that they don't have. So that bit's okay. That was magic. Or when they just kind of, they'll just throw in something, like some steam-powered random bit of technology, and you're like, you don't need that there.
So there's two types of steampunk that I've read. There's the ones that tend to have, like, supernatural elements in. And then there's the ones where it's more just a flavouring, so there's no magic. It's just a very plain world. So the China medieval book that I read, the Railsea one, so it's like there's trains that do the same thing that boats would in our world.
Yeah.
There's no oceans, it's all sand. But that's like you'd kind of class it as a steampunk because of the sort of technology involved. So there's no magic in that. Maybe you're reading the wrong ones.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I've gone too far into the fusion of... Yeah. Yeah.
And that's something I liked in the Fifth Wake book, is that there are steampunk worlds and he has like a steampunky tool, but he describes it as a sort of science.
Yeah.
So it's like, it doesn't follow the science of like the normal worlds, but it's sort of science.
See, that works better for me, because I'm kind of like, even if someone just points out that like, that's a bit weird, that this is what we're using for that job, but okay. That works better for me, because I just, it's like being, using something slightly odd just for the sake of it. Sometimes, and I'm kind of, I don't really, that doesn't sit well with me, but I didn't think I cared this deeply about it, but apparently I do.
I know, I'm kind of shocked to be, like, I'm not a huge, I've not been to steampunk fairs or anything like that, but I kind of dig the look of things, and I quite like it as a storytelling tool.
And I do like the way, I know I said it was, like, hipsterish, but, like, I do like the way people really get into it. Like, it's cool to see somebody get so excited about something. I think it's just kind of not my genre, I guess.
Yeah, that's
fair enough.
It's not
that I hate it. I just don't get it in that same way, because you can tell, like, some people have really connected with it and they're like, yes, this is perfect. This is what I want to be reading all the time.
It's like me and YA stuff. It took me a while to realise this. So I was like, you know what? I just don't get that much enjoyment from them, sadly. What can you do?
Maybe it's because you're an adult.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But I did used to listen to a podcast where they're mainly people our age, but all of them really liked YA books, and so it was kind of all they talked about. And I was like, you're all really entertaining, but I'm going to have to sort of peace out of this, because you're all talking about books that I'm not going to read.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
See, because I like young adult books, but I think it's kind of a guilty pleasure, because sometimes I read them and I'm like, this is terrible, but I'm enjoying it anyway.
I think I just want more out of them than they're ever going to give me, so never mind.
I might just be not that sophisticated in terms of my reading preferences. Maybe that's why.
And talking of YA, we started watching the Mortal Instruments movie, whatever it's called. City of
Bones?
Yes. I think it was on Amazon, wasn't it?
It was on Amazon.
And we just, like, the...
We just put it
service.
On.
We put it on.
We were waiting for the pizza. We were like, just put it on.
It was so long, and it was never ending.
And for a while there, it had Cersei Lannister, and we were like, ooh, Cersei Lannister, that'll be okay. Nope, she could not save it. It was so bad. I mean, there's bad films, and then there's that. I don't even know. Because we've read the book. And the book was alright. You know, quite...
That was just, okay.
We had our issues. We were all very jealous of the fact that Cassandra Clare got herself published when we can't. So we took that out on the story. I'm big enough to admit that. But,
I have other issues, mainly the brother-sister thing at the end.
Whatever. We'll get to that. But, you know, it just... Things that a pace that works in a book, which is where, like, pretty much every chapter will end on a cliffhanger. You can't translate that over to a film. It doesn't work.
Yeah. The only film that has gotten away with that is the first Harry Potter, because the first Harry Potter book is so short and tiny. So you get away with it, but yeah, when a book's that chunky, you've got to edit. This is why I really hate people who moan going, oh, but the film didn't do this. Fair enough if it's one scene or one character that you really liked and you're disappointed you didn't get to see it. But if you go, oh, it missed out half of the book, it's like, well, it has to. Do you want to sit in a theatre for 7 hours?
And the thing is, if it didn't, which this kind of didn't. I mean, okay, I have to admit, I did not read the book that recently, so it's possible that there is a lot missing from the film. But I didn't get the impression that they'd edited a lot out from the book. They'd actually stayed close.
Is an example of why you shouldn't. It was just like, yeah. And
it didn't work. It was bad. It was like almost unwatchably bad. Like, we had to stop.
Yeah. It was like, are we gearing up towards the act three?
This is still like act one.
Never mind. Now people are being creepy, and it's supposed to be a romance, but it's weird.
Yeah, none of the romance really worked.
And leaving.
which was interesting.
So I gave up about halfway through because I was really, really tired that night. And then I was like, how much is left?
We were like, what? We thought there'd be about 10 minutes left.
And then I think you... Didn't you?
I went back to it the next day and finished it. And
oh, did you finish it? Yeah. I thought you said you gave up again.
Oh, I must have gone back again then, because eventually I went back the next day and I watched like up until pretty much the end, and then I did finish it in the end, but it just, there was no point. It just didn't work as a film. I don't know how else I can say it, because you can get away with things in a book that it just doesn't work well in a film, and things like building up your love interest and then revealing the fact that, oh, he might be your brother.
So is that in the film? Still.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought they left that. I remember when it came out, people talked. Oh.
It was there. It wasn't... So they deal with the fallout of that mostly in book 2, which I'm guessing is why it's in book 1, but it didn't really, like...
I thought they'd do a Golden Compass.
Donnie, I knew you were going to mention that movie, and I was like, Donnie...
That book ends in child murder. The film doesn't even touch it.
But then equally, now that I've got some distance on that, I can see why they made that choice for the film, because they didn't know if they were going to get to make the next book, which is a real shame, because it's a great series.
Yeah.
I can understand why, but that is not the end of the book. Mm. And like, it's a really great ending in that it left you just going, what the hell just happened? What did you do? What do you mean we spent the whole book trying to save Roger, and then her dad, spoilers by the way, her dad just kills him, just like that was okay, like that happens every day, and then swans off up the staircase to another world, and you're like, really, that's where this book's gonna end? Okay, that's where this book's gonna end. It's
It's one of those moments, if you like just read it and you're sat in the theatre like, oh, it's gonna be really dramatic in a bit, and then the credits come, what, excuse me?
I think that was the thing, everybody was like, okay, so there was like, what, 20 minutes left, and then no credits.
Yeah,
we were all waiting for the next bit, the end of the book, and it wasn't.
Watch if they did a post-credits sting that was just the child murder. What?
Why would you do that? Yeah, maybe it was there the whole time and we just left in disgust.
I think we'll leave that there. Yeah. I don't know what we'll talk about next time, because we've pretty much discussed everything we've ever consumed media-wise last year.
It's fine. There's more. There's more.
There is always more. Well, thank you for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.